You are listening to a message by Dr. John Hanna. For more information, please go to springfieldchurch.org.
Let's begin with a word of prayer to begin this first Sunday of the new year. Father, I have sensed your beautiful presence in church today and in the past several months in such a beautiful way. Your peaceful presence is here. That's one of the things I love about our faith journey with you, is that regardless of what we're going through, you bring peace. You bring peace in the midst of the storms of life. As far as I know, the transition from the old year into the new year has been a peaceful one for most of us, and we're grateful for that. And we want to continue to feel and live in your peace all this next year. We know we're going to hit roadblocks along the way. We understand that. But with every obstacle we face, we don't face them alone. We face them with you helping us. And so we take your hand this morning on this first Sunday of the new year, and we want to devote all of who we are to all of who you are. And we want to see your goodness flow through us so that the world can see there is indeed a God who is good and wants to shower his children with goodness. As we look to your word today, as we begin this study today, Lord, would you help us catch a sense of what you want to do through us, even as you used people in the past in such powerful ways. I believe you still want to use people today in a mighty way for the kingdom of God. Thank you for your presence here today, and all God's people said, amen, amen. I want to tell you a story to begin the new year today. It's a very interesting story. And it's the story of a man named Edward Kimball. Does anyone know about Edward Kimball? Now don't pull out your phones and start Googling Edward Kimball. That's cheating. Does anyone know about Edward Kimball? I think we have a picture of him on the screen to help. Most people don't know about Edward Kimball. I didn't know about him until I read about his life recently. And it's very interesting, and I want to share about his life and the impact that he had. In the middle of the 19th century, in a small church in Boston, Massachusetts, there was a lowly Sunday school teacher by the name of Edward Kimball. And he had a burden to reach people for Jesus Christ. Now, history does not record much about this man. We don't really know all that much about him. We know that he was shy and he was timid and not really a go-getter, but he loved Jesus and he loved the Sunday school class that he taught. This simple Sunday school teacher just had a passion to share Jesus with people. He had a student in his class that he wasn't quite sure if this young man even knew Jesus or had a personal relationship with Jesus. And so he decided one day that he was going to intentionally go out of his way and visit this young man where he worked. He worked at a shoe shop. And Edward Kimball was so timid, he didn't even want to go inside the shoe shop. But he went in, and he talked to this young man in his class and shared the gospel, the good news of Jesus, to a young man named Dwight Lehman Moody. And what an impact that testimony had, because D.L. Moody went on to be a great evangelist. That name sounds familiar to us. God used D.L. Moody to lead many people to Christ, and he started the Moody Church and many other Christian ministries. All this because his lowly Sunday school teacher named Edward Kimball decided to go out of his way and try to connect with him and share the gospel of Jesus Christ with him. But the story does not stop there. As D.L. Moody grew in his walk with Christ, we know he felt a calling to be a preacher. He wanted to captivate his culture for Jesus, especially there in the Chicago area. Moody went on to be one of America's all-time greatest preachers. He preached in revivals across America and in Europe. As he was preaching on one particular trip in England, Moody befriended another American evangelist named Wilbur Chapman. Chapman gave his life to Christ years before, but Moody encouraged him to keep on preaching the gospel in order to see others come to know Christ. And so Chapman, who was about to quit, continued to preach around the world. And occasionally Chapman would take other apprentices with him in order to mentor them, just as Moody encouraged him. he wanted to encourage others as well to make an impact around the world. One of those apprentices was a young man by the name of Billy Sunday, who was a former professional baseball player. And Billy Sunday, because of Chapman's influence, became a prominent revivalist in America. He was popular for the saying, going to church doesn't make you any more of a Christian, just like going into a garage doesn't make you a car. Billy Sunday is attributed for saying that. But he had a profound effect on many people in America back then, in the early 20th century. In 1924, Billy Sunday had such an influence in Charlotte, North Carolina, that the local businessmen there in Charlotte started what is called the Billy Sunday Layman Evangelistic Club. It was later renamed the Charlotte Business Men's Club. And these men, who were so impacted by Billy Sunday's preaching, chose to intentionally impact their community for Christ there in Charlotte. And they wanted to bring a revival service to their city. They sent out requests for Billy Sunday to come, but he wasn't able to make it back because his health was failing. But these local businessmen would not give up. They would not be deterred. They kept praying. They said, God, please send us somebody to preach in our city, to preach the good news of Jesus. And finally, in 1934, a local businessman asked a preacher by the name of Mordecai Ham to hold a revival in their city. And then during that meeting, a young man by the name of Grady Wilson came to know Christ. And Wilson was so moved to see his friends come to know Christ that he invited them the following nights. And one night, there was a young man by the name of Billy Graham who came to one of those meetings. He was just 16 years old at the time. But God touched his heart in such a powerful way. And we know that Billy Graham went on to be used of God to preach the gospel to more people in history because of the influence of these people that had come before. How do we understand the full impact of Billy Graham's ministry? Well, when you look back, it's all because of the testimony and the boldness of a timid, shy Sunday school teacher named Edward Kimball, who led a young man who he knew, named D.L. Moody, to the Lord, who went on, and you see the domino effect, one by one by one by one. Isn't that an amazing story? We've all heard of Billy Graham, but none of us have ever heard of Edward Kimball. I want to begin this new year talking about how God is calling us to step out and be used as part of his domino effect. Because none of us would be here today, none of us would know the power of God in our lives, if God first didn't send his son Jesus to this earth. And then what did Jesus do to begin his ministry? He called 12 men that he would mentor and disciple and live with and pour his life into for three and a half years. And those 12 men then created the greatest domino effect ever. And those 12 men then impacted the lives of thousands and millions and hundreds of millions later. And so I want to begin a series on the 12 disciples. 12 very ordinary men. And as we get into this study, you're going to see that these men were not super special, highly educated men. But there was a reason why Jesus intentionally chose each of the 12 that he did. Now, some of the 12 we know better than others. Today we're going to look at Peter, and he's probably the most well-known of all the disciples, but he's not the most important. They were all important. They each had their own unique personalities. What would have happened if Jesus chose 12 men who were just like Peter? I don't think his ministry would have been as effective. Now, just because Peter was the loudest and the brashest doesn't mean he was most important. As a matter of fact, Jesus had more difficulties with Peter than any of the other. Jesus had to rebuke Peter and correct Peter more than the others. Peter was a diamond in the rough. Jesus really had to work with him. But if Jesus could get a hold of a man like Peter, he can work through any of us. And so let's talk a little bit about Peter. Turn in your New Testaments to Mark chapter 1, because Peter was the first that Jesus called. Turn to Mark chapter 1, and let's look a little bit into the life of Peter and some of the lessons that we can learn from him. Even as Jesus is calling us to be couriers of good. What's a courier? Courier is someone who delivers something, who brings something. And so these 12 were the original couriers of the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And God is calling us to be couriers of the good news as well. Mark chapter 1, beginning at verse 16. As Jesus walked beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon, or Peter. We know that Jesus changed his name to Peter. In the Bible, that happens quite a bit. Names get changed. And it's a reflection of the old being left behind and God doing something new. And so he found Simon and his brother Andrew casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. "Come, follow me," Jesus said, "and I will make you fishers of men." At once, they left their nets and followed him. Peter is what we would call a type A personality today. He was very driven. He had a lot of passion. Peter, in many ways, typifies the average guy. You ladies are good at being efficient at many different things. That's just the way God wired you. And so a woman can be a great mother and housewife, but also work and run a business. You ladies are uniquely wired in that way. Us guys, we're a little bit different. In order to be good at something, we have to be singularly focused at that one thing. Most guys are not good at multitasking. We just have to be focused. And the more passionate a man is, the more focused he needs to be in order to be successful. And Peter was a highly passionate man. And so when the Bible says he was a fisherman, he was a pretty good fisherman. We can assume that he and his family were doing pretty well in the fishing industry. They worked long hours, they worked hard, but they were good at what they did. And so for Jesus to come along as he does, of course, they had heard about this Jesus, and they were captivated and curious and interested. For Jesus to come along and say, "Guys, come follow me," and to leave behind their business that they were very good at and worked hard at, and to leave their families, and to drop everything just like that and follow him, speaks volumes. They gave up their livelihood to follow Jesus. They wanted to learn from this rabbi, and they had much to learn. And so let's give Peter credit where credit is due. He and his brother, they followed Jesus. And before I get any further in this, Jesus is still calling us to drop everything, to drop what we're good at, to drop our passions, and to leave everything and follow him. It's just as hard to do today as it was back then. But Jesus is still calling us to follow him. And I don't want to make the assumption that just because someone is sitting in church means that they are completely following Jesus. In your own heart, how are you going to answer that call that Jesus is placing in your own life? Drop everything and give your all to me. Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. There's no higher calling than that. Peter was filled with passion, but that passion had to be redirected. And so in dropping everything and following Jesus, that's a good step. He redirected this passion that was within him. He redirected that into following Jesus. But that passion still needed to be grown, and his faith needed to grow, and he needed to mature. So I want to look at three episodes in the life of Peter that kind of highlight how Jesus had to deal with Peter and work with him and develop him. So turn to Matthew 14. We, I think, are all very familiar with this story of Jesus walking on the water. Matthew 14, beginning at verse 22. And let me read this story to you. Immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. During the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid." Now here's Peter, the spokesman for the disciples. He's going to try to take charge of and take control because he had some natural leadership abilities. "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," Jesus said. And to Peter's credit, he got out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and began to sink. And he cried out, "Lord, save me." You know, when you find yourself sinking in life, it's always a good prayer. "Lord, would you come help me? Would you come save me?" Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You of little faith," he said, "why do you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. And those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." To Peter's credit, he got out of the boat. I give him credit for that. Too many followers of Jesus wouldn't even do that. Too many of us want to stay comfortable in the boat because that's where we feel safe. Jesus is always calling us to himself. Even if it means that Jesus is on the water, we need to trust him and go to him. And so to Peter's credit, he did that. But when he took his eyes off of Jesus, he began to sink. And Jesus took this teachable moment to teach him about faith. That passion is not enough to follow Jesus. You need to have faith in Jesus. And so it was a teachable moment for Jesus. Where's your faith level at today? Do you have little faith? That's a good start, but don't stay there. Because in other places in the gospel, Jesus talks about having great faith. And so wherever your faith level is at, take the next step with Jesus. I talked about tithing earlier. I think a lot of Christians tip instead of tithe because it's safer to tip. You know, I'd rather just put a dollar or two in the offering. I don't want to do the 10% because, man, finances are tough. And if I do this, you know, for most of us in this room, it takes a great deal of faith to tithe. It's easy to tip. But to take that step of faith and to tithe, now that will stretch your faith and that will grow you. That's just one example. There are other examples. And God is talking to you about what he wants you to do. Where's your faith in all this? Take that step of faith. Because it's then that God can use us. Turn to Mark 14. We were in Matthew 14. Now turn to Mark 14. Here's another episode in the life of Peter. One of the things with type A personalities is that they kind of get a little bit ahead of themselves. And they think they can conquer the world on their own. And that's when they have to learn to rely on Jesus and wait on him and his timing. Mark 14, beginning at verse 27. This is near the end of Jesus' life, and Peter was so sure of himself that he made some claims that turned out not to be true. Let's look at this. Mark 14, beginning at verse 27. Jesus has some harsh words for all of his disciples. He says, "You will all fall away." Yikes. "You will all fall away. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep will be scattered. But after I have risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee." Now here's Peter. Here's his loud mouth. Verse 29. Peter declared, "Even if all fall away, I will not." I think he had good intentions. Again, you see this passion. "Lord, you can count on me. No matter what happens, I'm going to be there for you. I'm your right-hand man. I'm not going to fall away." Well, Jesus had to smooth out some of those rough edges. Look at verse 30. "I tell you the truth," Jesus answered, "today, yes, today, tonight, before the rooster crows twice, you will disown me three times. Verse 31. But Peter insisted emphatically, even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you. And then all the others chimed in after Peter and said the same thing. And we know how the rest of the story goes, not once, not twice, but three times. Just as Jesus said, Peter denied him. Passion alone isn't enough to follow Jesus. There has to be faith in Jesus. We can't do this on our own. However well-intentioned we are, however passion that we have inside of us, it must be the fact that we have complete faith in Jesus, not in ourselves and not in what we can do. We all have good intentions, but it's not about us. It's not about us not denying Jesus, because we all will. It's about what He wants to do through us. It's less of us and more of Him in us. So the Christian journey isn't about what we do. It's about Him working through us. And then finally, the third episode in the life of Peter that I want us to look at is in John 21. John 21, Jesus had died and resurrected. He's having breakfast with His disciples after the resurrection, and He's having a conversation here in John 21, beginning at verse 15. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these? Yes, Lord, he said. You know that I love you. And Jesus said, feed my lambs. Or another way of interpreting that is just do my work. Continue my ministry. Verse 16, again, Jesus said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Yes, he answered. Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And Jesus said, take care of my sheep. Do my work. Continue my ministry. Verse 17, the third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Now Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And Jesus said, feed my sheep. If you get deeper in this passage and you study the Greek in there, you'll begin to discover that there's different Greek words there for love that Jesus uses. But the point is that redirected passion to Jesus is a good start, but it's not enough. Now those passions need to get, and this is what we in our Nazarene world like to use this word, now those passions need to be sanctified. In other words, now those passions need to be completely consecrated and given over to God. It's not enough that we just redirect our passions. Now everything about who we are must be given over to God. Do we love Jesus more than anything in this world? More than anything. And the evidence of that is that we will do His work and we will serve Him and we will be a courier of the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. A question that Jesus asks Peter, he's asking us today. Do you truly love me? It's not just enough to say, yes, I love you. But it now must be followed up with, well, what are you going to do with that love? And how are you serving me? Today we're going to take Holy Communion because it is a beautiful reenactment of Christ's love for us. From start to finish in the ministry of Jesus, Peter had seen it all. Even up to the very end, he saw his teacher, his rabbi, his Lord, give his all for the sake of the gospel. And in asking Peter, do you love me? He's really saying, do you love me as much as I love the world? You saw what I just went through. Are you willing to go through that for me? Tradition tells us that when they went to crucify Peter, He didn't want to be crucified upright as Jesus was because he felt so unworthy. Tradition tells us that he wanted to be crucified upside down because he felt so unworthy. For all of Peter's flaws and shortcomings, we can say that he really was faithful to the end, and he did give his life for the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I think Peter proved that he really did love Jesus. Thanks be to God that Jesus could take a man who was rough around the edges and work with him and be frustrated with him. Jesus was so frustrated with Peter at one point, remember, he called him Satan. But he diligently worked with him because he saw something in him. Because of Peter, how many people have come to know Jesus? Just like Edward Kimball and his desire to serve Jesus. We take communion today because we recognize that Jesus so loved the world that he gave his all for us. And our response should be, Lord, I will partake of you because I do love you and I want to serve you. I'm not perfect. I have my flaws. I will probably deny you. I will probably stumble and fall. But Lord, be patient with me and use me and love me because I want to be used of you for the gospel of Jesus Christ. Father, this morning we take Holy Communion out of deep humility, deep, deep humility for what you have done for us and what you are doing in us. You are shaping us and molding us. We are diamonds in the rough, and you are working in and through us to be curators, disciples for the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. We confess our sin. We consecrate our passions to you. We direct our life, our loves, our everything to you, Lord, so that you can take us and use us as your people to be a blessing in this community. You did it before. You used 12 men and they changed the world. You can certainly use 12 of us and we can influence Springfield, Oregon for you.
Hi, I'm John Hanna, pastor of All Things Good, a church that believes in the goodness of God. We are located on the corner of 18th and E Street in Springfield, and our Sunday morning service is 11 o'clock a.m. For more information about our church, you can visit our website at springfieldchurch.org. We look forward to meeting you, and I hope you have a great day.